world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 381. I'm creator and host, Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered her talents to do work she loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. As a toddler, her grandmother saw her intuitive powers and gift for healing. For years, Deborah felt she had to suppress her gift. I knew I had to justify my healing abilities by getting a university degree. Reaching the perfect balance between the science of medicine and the art of healing has been her lifelong challenge. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Deborah Maragopoulos. Deborah, welcome.
Thank you very much, Don.
It is our pleasure. Are you using your talents doing work that you love?
Absolutely.
Okie dokie, we want to go into the whole story. The hormone queen, Deborah Maragopoulos, blends the science of medicine with the art of healing. Upon graduating from UCLA with a master's in nursing, Deborah studied nutritional science, functional medicine, quantum physics, genetics, neuroimmune endocrinology, and metaphysical healing. Through clinical research and two decades of collecting empirical data, Deborah developed a unique holistic healthcare model blending naturopathic and allopathic therapies, as well as a promising nutraceutical product, Genesis Gold. Deborah lives with her husband in the beautiful Ojai Valley. Deborah, that's a summary of your career. Tell our listeners around the world what you're engaged in now that has you excited.
Well, what I'm really excited about now is besides my family practice, I have an intuitive integrative medical practice. I launched my second book, and it's Hormones in Harmony, Heal Your Hypothalamus. It's been amazing, and I'm getting all kinds of great interviews like this with you that's allowing me to get my message out into the world. I also developed a charity in 2007, Divine Daughters Unite, and because Hormones in Harmony is bringing me so much more traffic and business, and I'm selling more of my Genesis Gold, I'm donating more and more proceeds to Divine Daughters Unite, and I'm super anxious to go back to Nicaragua this year to bring change to women's health care.
Good heavens. That's really, really quite remarkable. Well, first of all, congratulations on the writing. That's wonderful and so needed, as we talked before the show. How long have you had the charity?
2007, I developed it. It was after I had launched my first book, which was a novel called Love Dance, Awakening of the Divine Daughter, and wanted to use the proceeds from that, as well as my Genesis Gold sales proceeds, a percentage of that, to actually support charities. But I couldn't find one that I really loved, so I decided to start my own. And I have on the board of this charity young women. There's a few of us older women, but mostly young women who have great ideas, but I'm literally teaching them the background of altruistic work and how these charitable organizations need to run. And they're just doing an amazing job. It's what I would have wanted when I was in my early 20s, and all they wanted was my blood, sweat, and tears, and maybe a little bit of money I had, and they never wanted ideas.
Of course.
And so this way, these girls are super involved. They were very creative. And, you know, the older women I have a few of us on the board. There's two older women on the board. The rest are all young, very young women in their 20s. We just guide them, and they have the ideas. And one of the ideas was to adopt a villager from a small Nicaraguan town, Kilali, last year. And I went with her to her town on a medical relief trip, and it was amazing. And they invited me to go back and teach them how to improve women's health care.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. So, congratulations. Tell us just for a minute, we want to get into your story, but this Genesis Gold sounds fascinating. Tell us about that just for a minute.
Well, that's a little long story. It's not a minute story. So basically, Genesis is the nutraceutical that I developed because I could not find the one thing to treat what I intuitively knew was the root issue of most people's hormonal issues. And when I'm speaking hormones, I'm speaking the neurotransmitters, the immune factors, and all of your hormones, not just your sex hormones.
Exactly.
And the key to that, the maestro of that entire symphony, is the hypothalamus. Okay. I couldn't find the one thing. And Genesis Gold literally came to me in dreams, the whole formula. It came in 1999. I started doing research from 2000 to 2003, manufactured it in 2003. It's been out for 13 years. Sort of kept it in my back pocket, just treating my patients, a little bit of online sales. And then finally decided this year it was time to launch the book, tell my story, talk about Genesis Gold, and it's just boomed.
Oh my gosh, it's wonderful. So, it's a completely online product, right?
Oh yeah, it's online. It's a powdered supplement. It has everything in it that I was giving my patients in multiple bottles of natural stuff that I looked at and said, "Holy moly, I can't take all that. I need to make it a little more simple." And I was at the time, I was actually working with quite a few learning disabled children. It was back in the 90s. They would have been called autism spectrum disorder back then. But okay. At that point, it was learning disabilities of undetermined diagnosis. And these parents were bringing them to me in busloads from all around the Central Valley in California, where there's a lot of toxicity, a lot of chromosomal abnormalities. And we were creating what the parents called brews, because we were like mixing green powders and squeezing capsules and tablets, because the children were anywhere from infants on to preteens. And so it was by their body weight. And these parents were begging me, please make this, please create this. And so I dreamt the formula. I dreamt, and I'll give you more background on that. It has to do with why I do what I do.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. In a society, in a medical system that is trillions of dollars of services to treating symptoms, it's so beautiful to talk to somebody getting to the sources, because that's the only way to do it, right?
Absolutely. Beautiful. I mean, literally changing genetic expression.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
I just can't even imagine. I mean, I can't imagine, but bravo for you. That's just incredible.
Thank you.
Well, as you know, as we've discussed, everyone's life journey is composed of turning points or passages, as Gail Sheehy called them. And every handful of years since the day we're born, we face people and events and have choices and changes that determine the next handful of years of our lives. Would you take us back into the backstory, your backstory of Deborah Maragopoulos, of the more meaningful events that have made you who you are today?
Absolutely. I would like to begin in the very beginning, and that is when I was a very, very young child. My grandmother was one of what would have been called sort of the village witch back in the day, but she was in South Philly and very Italian, and people would come to her to interpret their dreams.
I'm jealous. I have to tell you, I'm jealous. I have great grandmothers, but I was not as lucky enough to get the village witch. I think that's fabulous.
Well, she, they don't even call that then. They just thought she was special,
but
they would bring all their troubles to her.
Yes.
And I have one of my earliest memories is sitting on the kitchen floor. It's pink linoleum with the metal legs, so this is back, and I'm maybe 19 or 20 months old. So this is back in I'm 55 now. So okay. This is what, 62. And there's three sets of legs around me, and it's mommy who's really pregnant with the twins. So her little legs are far apart with this big pregnant belly, Nana's legs, and then another woman's legs. And the other woman, I'm playing with some toys, and there's drops of blood dripping onto the linoleum. And I stand up. I'm that little, but I can stand up under the table. I place my hand on her belly and tell her, "Not this one." And I confirmed this memory with my mother, who said that was the moment your grandmother knew you had the gift and started to mentor you.
Oh my gosh.
This woman had come to seek some help because she was cramping and was miscarrying.
Wow.
From my grandmother.
Truly amazing.
But unfortunately my father was quite disturbed by the witchiness of all this. It was just too weird for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took us to California when I was only 2 years old. And so from there, crazy as it sounds, I communicated with my grandmother, telepathically. I mean, we were in constant communication, and they would come and visit us maybe once a year, but I was able to still have conversations with her and talk to her. And it was, and I thought everybody did this. I heard the animals, I heard the plants. I knew when my parents were ill or anybody around me was ill. I just thought it was normal. And it wasn't until I was probably in the late elementary school years where my grandmother and mother were saying, "Okay, this is all well and good, but you don't need to discuss it with everyone."
Right.
So that's when I sort of hid my powers, per se, so much so that I realized my powers, my gifts, my talents would manifest when I became a young woman, because I knew if I was a woman, I would become powerful. And when I started my menstrual cycles, it's frightened me, because there was really no support at that point. My grandmother was, still 3,000 miles away, And I knew that I needed to use my skills as a medical provider way back then. I was 13 years old. And I knew I was going into medicine.
Okay. All right. So forgive me. I missed the thread. You started your menstrual cycles and what
happened? And I got afraid. So what happened was, is I literally chose to stop them by becoming anorexic and it worked. And this was before they had the word for anorexia. So Karen Carpenter hadn't died yet. My parents brought me to the doctor and said, she's so skinny. And he said, feed her. She says, she won't eat, you know, but it worked. I reversed everything. Wow. And when I did that, it sort of blunted my gifts. I no longer was quite so perceptive. Although for school, I was always had that kind of perception. I remember looking at a test and not studying because I never really needed to, and would ask the test to the teacher, looking at the test, what do you want from me? And the answers would stand up base relief, and I would just circle them, write in the right answers, and wait for everybody else to finish their test.
That's amazing.
All the way up through my board exams at the state level. At the age of 22, I did the same thing.
Good heavens. Good heavens. So, yeah, we think we know something, right? About life in this universe, about life in this cosmos. And we just know a tiny little fraction of what there is to know. And this conversation is...
It's a little odd, but and I knew I had to justify my healing abilities by getting a degree that I needed to, you know, play the game, get really good grades, graduate as the valedictorian of my class and get through the system.
Okay.
But it was meeting my spouse at the age of 17. I dreamt him before I met him. He showed up 5 months later. And we have been together ever since.
My word.
Okay.
Okay.
So once I met him is when I sort of opened back up to, it's okay to be a young woman.
Oh my gosh.
It's all right. And I allowed my body to blossom and my menstrual cycles came back.
Oh my gosh.
And that all the dreams came back and everything started happening again. So then I decided I'm going to college. And at that point I volunteer at the local emergency room, a little candy striper, and I'm watching, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to be a doctor at that point.
Okay.
And I'm watching what's happening in the emergency room. And I realized the nurses are running the show there. And I didn't see one single female doctor under the age of 40 that had really started her life, had kids. Huh. And I thought, well, you know what? I want everything. I knew I was going to have children. I knew I'd have two children. And I knew I was going to be a young mother. I wasn't going to be an old mother. So I decided I'd become a nurse practitioner because that way I could do what the doctors are doing, but still get through school quickly and still have that more wellness-oriented education rather than disease-oriented education.
Oh, beautiful. You noticed that the nurses were engaging with each other and with the patients where the doctors just swooped in and did their thing and left.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and the education of nursing, I mean, at UCLA, it was bio, psycho, social, spiritual, environmental health.
Okay.
You looked at everything.
Okay.
It wasn't just pathophysiology. It wasn't just about the disease orientation.
Okay.
So...
did you love it?
Oh my gosh. I just loved everything about it. I loved anatomy and physiology. I loved the cadavers. I loved everything about the body. I just thought it was fascinating and it just fell in place for me. I mean, people have so much trouble getting into nursing school now and medical school. And I really believe if you're doing what your calling is and you're not fighting it, that you're really going with the flow, it just all opens up. I mean, nothing was an issue. I knew where I was going. Boom, boom, boom. I'm in.
Right.
You know, everything just laid itself out. Everything was ease and joy and there was no stress with it. It was just this amazing experience at a huge college. You know, UCLA is a big school and I was from a small town.
Right.
But I just really enjoyed it. I ended up back at UCLA at the age of 23.
What did you do after UCLA?
Well, UCLA was, so first off, in those days, you couldn't become a nurse practitioner right away.
Okay.
You had to become an RN and you had to be an RN for at least 2 years before they'd let you back and get your master's degree and become a nurse practitioner.
Okay,
now,
okay.
Today you'd get a doctorate as a nurse practitioner, but back in the 80s, it was bachelor's of nursing, 2 years of experience before you could apply to graduate school.
Okay.
So right after nursing school, my husband and I get married and, within 5 months, I have a dream that I'm going to have a blonde baby boy. Now, I'm Italian and my husband's Greek. And I, as you saw, I'm a brunette. We don't have blondes in our family, but I dreamt that. It was so clear to me. I knew what his name would be. And I tell my husband that we were going to get pregnant this month. And at that point, I have a little runner's amenorrhea, which means that I was exercising so much that I'm not having menstrual cycles again. So,
oh, okay. What did you call that?
It's called runner's amenorrhea, or exercise induced amenorrhea. Menorrhea is periods, and A means none. So okay. Amenorrhea.
Amenorrhea. Okay.
So I'm not having periods, but I had dreamt that I was going to have this child. My body immediately puts on 5 pounds. I was very thin, 5 pounds, and I get pregnant. I know the moment I got pregnant, and go to the doctors, you know, a few weeks later to confirm everything. And they're shocked because I hadn't had periods, you know, for, well, a year or so from the stress of, you know, college and getting married and all of that. And so I'm pregnant with this baby, and I'm not showing very well. I mean, I am very, very small. And the doctor keeps saying to me, well, you're just very athletic. And my mother, my Italian mother and my Greek mother-in-law are saying, there's something's wrong. Something's wrong. You should be showing by now. I end up delivering this baby prematurely at UCLA. I had severe toxemia. That's where your blood pressure is really high. I actually went into HELLP syndrome, very high blood pressure, liver failure, kidney failure, seizures.
Good heavens.
Kids are sick.
Good.
So, and this is all happening in Santa Barbara, where I was actually working at the time. They don't have an ICU, NICU opening when I'm in labor at that point. So I tell them to take me down to UCLA. They ambulance me down. They don't have anybody in the ambulance with me but the driver. So I'm monitoring my own IV as we're going down there, trying to keep me from birthing this baby, this 30-week fetus. You know, it was crazy. So we get there. They keep me from delivering for about 11 days. And finally my, you know, amniotic sac ruptures. I develop amniitis because they're trying to keep me from delivering, and they have to let me deliver this baby. He has intrauterine growth retardation. He's very, very tiny. And so he should weigh 4.5 pounds. It was 2.5 pounds. But when I deliver, they take one look at the baby and rush the baby out. And I don't even get to hold him. They rush him out. I tell my husband, follow our baby. Whatever you do, don't leave that baby. We're at UCLA. They have 22 miles of corridors in here, and they're going to lose him.
Right.
So follow the baby and don't leave the baby. And whatever you do, don't talk to an intern or a resident. Only talk to the chief resident. That's it. Don't talk to anybody else.
Right.
He comes back. I'm still in intensive care because they're still trying to monitor my seizures. And he is bawling, just bawling. And I said, what is wrong? He says, our baby's going to be deaf, blind. And at that time, we used the word mentally retarded. That's what he was told.
Okay.
And we don't know what it is. I'm like, what are you talking about? We had a boy. He said, no, the baby has no penis. They don't know what it is. It doesn't have it. It has no genitals that are, we can't tell.
Oh, my gosh.
Baby's born with this rash. They thought it was rubella. It wasn't rubella. I'm allergic to penicillin. They'd given me some kind of cillin, and the baby had the same rash. But it was born at what we would call intersex. Chromosomes come back. It is XY. It's male chromosomes, but they call the child an XY female. So because I'm so sick, I'm not able to see the baby for at least 2 weeks. And it's a couple weeks later that we finally get the chromosome studies back. So we're sitting with the pediatric endocrinologist. Now, this is the top endocrinologist in the United States. I've called Stanford. I've called back East. I've called all the top medical centers, and this is the one we need to see. She's dealt with this the most. And I have my Italian mother, my Greek mother-in-law, my husband and I, and we're 22 and 23. He's 10 months younger than I am. And we're sitting in front of this endocrinologist, and she says, you need to raise this child as a girl because it's easier to make a hole than a pole.
Oh, gosh.
And I said to her, that doesn't feel right to me. What happens to this baby if she, as an adolescent or a young adult, feels like she's in the wrong body? And she says, we don't know because we don't follow them once they become young adults. I said that it's the wrong decision. So we, my mother was so cute because the doctor kept arguing that the child would have no secondary sex characteristics. And she said, well, what's that? And I explained to her, because the doctor's jargon, she couldn't understand, that it was body hair. And she said, are you crazy? The baby's half Italian, half Greek. The women have mustaches in this family. There's no reason to cut off any body parts.
Right.
So anyhow, so we raised the child with going with the chromosomes and using, at that point, you had to pick a team. There was no they, it was either he or she. So we chose chromosomes. We chose he, named the child Jairus, which was very generic, kind of ambiguous name, and allowed the baby to just basically be whatever it wanted to be, but referred to it as male in the beginning.
Right.
And, Jairus is why I do what I do. I had to go back to school, become a nurse practitioner, learn neuroimmune endocrinology, cell receptor site activity, and prove to the doctors that they were wrong. The DNA is not set in stone. It can be changed through nurture.
Good heavens. This is an utterly fascinating story. So how has it evolved? How has it played out?
Well, we raised the baby as a boy. One of the things that happened was now today, if he was born today, we would have raised the child intersex. We would have not chosen a sex at all and allow the child to choose its sexual identity and determine any kind of medical intervention like a genital reassignment or anything like that later in its life. Mm-hmm. Back in 1984, that was not the choice. Mm-hmm. You had to choose a teen, boy or girl. Okay. So at that point, he did have some medical issues that required some surgical revision. He had huge hernias and literally could not urinate and defecate properly. So those needed to be resolved. When that happened, I had been at UCLA working on a surgical floor with a doctor who was actually just starting transgender reassignment surgeries. And so I contacted him and I said, I know you haven't worked on children, but is it possible to do any type of genital work on a very small child, because my babies literally can't urinate properly because of the genital malformation. And he examined the baby and said, I don't really have much to work with here. And I had a dream that if we gave the baby a little testosterone, that things would start to grow a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, can we give him some testosterone? And he said, I don't know. I guess we could try. And it worked. So we did that, and then that allowed them to be able to perform the surgery to reverse the hernias and bring the gonads, which are the testes in a male, and the ovaries in a female, which are in the belly because there was nothing for it to descend into, down into the scrotal sac. So there was some surgical revision just because he couldn't urinate, defecate properly. So it was more medically.
So Jairus, his whole, that remarkable story of Jairus's birth and growth and evolving was really a huge catalyst, to say the very least, to put you into the next phase of your career.
Absolutely. I knew exactly what I was going to do. I had to do it. I literally had to save him from our health maintenance organization, our HMO, because they wanted to do everything on the cheap end and wanted to do everything related to what they understood in adult medicine and not in child's, you know, pediatric medicine.
Right.
And I don't know how parents who have no medical education get through this, because it was really hard.
Oh, listen, all you have to do is look at vaccines and all the other things that are going on today. And it's just a nightmare of confusion based on, well, lots of things that you know very, very well. Let me transition just for a minute into the topic of people finding themselves. You have had you are living a courageous career. You've known very, very early on, presciently early on, who you are and what you want, and you've chiseled your career out of whole. You've made your own path. You follow the road less traveled, to say the least. The statistics around the world are that most people don't, as you saw the data. What do you think that's about? Just briefly, why do you think it's difficult? It's funny, the metaphor of HMOs and people getting caught up in the system is one of the key reasons, right? but you take the floor and tell us why you think that people from an early age, or even at whatever stage of their career, are not able to find their sweet spot.
Well, I think the way I found my sweet spot is I followed my intuition. And I was mentored in that, that it was okay to do that. Your dreams and the way you felt were more important than the facts. And we're socialized very early on. See, little children, when they're born all the way up to about 7 years of age, are incredibly intuitive. They're incredibly connected to the world that is unseen by us adults.
Yes.
They know things, they feel things, and they interact with those things. It is their reality. It's just not, it may not be our reality anymore, but it is definitely their reality. And by the age of seven, they've gone to school. They start to, you know, get involved with the media. They start to get acculturated. They become domesticated and they forget that connection. And now they're following the rules.
Yes.
Well, one of the things that I never did is follow rules. Because I had such a strong intuition, I had such a strong feeling about things, and I was allowed in my family to follow my dreams. And these were important. These were real. It was never not real that I heard my horse crying for me in the middle of the night and she's hurt. Mm-hmm. And I'd go running out and my parents were like, you know, not where you're going, but how can we help? Because they knew, I knew things. So I wasn't, you know, pushed down. I wasn't suppressed. And I think a lot of people are by society and by the fear that if I can't see it, touch it, feel it, it doesn't really exist.
Yes. And we just had another guest on that was talking about the subconscious. And he said exactly what you said, that from zero to seven or zero to seven and a half, it's all just, you know, a young person just takes in the world around them. And it's not about anything rational. It's all about instinctive and intuitive, right?
Well, yeah, we're in a theta brainwave state from 2 to 6. And that's basically the same state you're in when you're meditating or you've been hypnotized.
Yes.
So you get in programmed with imprintable messages that don't really make much sense, but they really direct everything you do.
It's amazing what happens to us when we get into the system. And I guess it's just another brick in the wall, as Pink Floyd said. I guess it's when you're just in that logical, rational system, it's just hard for your intuition and instincts to thrive, huh? For most people.
Well, because, I mean, look at the whole school system. I had to learn how to, I mean, I basically played the game of getting the good grades and everything, but I cheated using my intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a system to that, and it's all about filling in the blanks.
Yes.
Instead of just tell me how you feel. Tell me what your creativity is. Explain, describe, dance it out, sing it out, write it out. We don't have all those options. We all have to fill in those bubbles.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
That, I think, keeps us from our creativity. I mean, Jairus ended up becoming a teacher. He's an English and history teacher. He had some learning issues as well as a little one, which is common with a child that's so premature that they have some learning issues. And he really felt like he needed to go into teaching because he wanted to help children like him learn in different ways. Because he could not learn in the way that he was being taught. It was difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And he's brilliant, but he's a kinesthetic learner.
Right.
We don't teach that way.
No, we don't. Yeah, exactly. We produce factory workers. Only now we produce technicians. Well, what have been the most palpable benefits, Deborah, to you in your life on any level for trusting your intuition, your instincts, your profound instincts, and living life on your terms?
Well, it's allowed me to have this really deep connection with my beloved, my husband, my children. I mean, I don't worry about my children. I feel them all the time. And so even when they're far away from me, I can feel if they need me and call them when they need me. Last year, my mother passed away in my arms. And she ran my businesses since 1997. So it was a very critical transformational year for me to let go of her and also try to help us survive this turmoil of losing her. Plus she was old school, you know, everything was sticky notes and stuff. So she wasn't doing a lot online. And so I had to break into I couldn't even break into my own bank account. It was sort of crazy, but she told me before she died, remember, this is my intuitive mother as well.
Yes.
All these things that were going to happen and that her death, her illness and her death was going to transform my business.
Ah.
And right after she passed, about 10 days later, I had this amazing meditation. I've always believed that those in the spirit world are sort of like behind a veil. I would use that terminology. It's just beyond the veil. And the veil's thinner for some of us where we're able to perceive that spirit world. And others, it's like really thick, like a wall. And in this meditation, she came to me and she has passed already. She's about 10 days before. And she showed me that it isn't a veil. There is no there. Just amazing meditation. And since then, actually from that point in the end of July, it'll be anniversary of her death on the 21st of this month. At that point, at the end of July, until I went to Nicaragua, which is the work, she was the eldest in the Divine Daughters Board.
And okay.
She taught me as a little girl that if you heal a woman, you heal her family and you heal her community, you heal the world. So my focus was always, although I do family practice, it was, if I can focus on the mom, they'll all heal.
Beautiful.
So I took her with me, literally took her ashes with me to Nicaragua and, you know, did some ritual blessing ceremony there and felt like I was finally doing my mother's work, what she always would have wanted to do if she wasn't so locked up herself by society.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just amazingly beautiful. And I feel now that she's actually within me. Yeah. She no longer comes to me. She's part of me.
Yes. I hear that. Beautiful. In 1 minute, what would you say to listeners 18 or 80 about how to break out of the system, if you will, the logic system, the conform system, and get into their instincts? Just to get started. I know it's a long process, but just a few tidbits to get started.
Well, first of all, I would say to them that they need to start listening to that inner voice. And that inner voice doesn't always talk. It's more of a feeling, and most people feel it in their gut. So when your gut is acting up, you usually need to take action. You need to do something different. You need to listen to that. And I'm not talking about a stomach upset. It's
right.
That kind of anticipation kind of feeling that you get in your tummy that you just feel like something's off. And most of us let our heads guide us instead of that body wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, your body is what's going to talk to you in the beginning. My body still talks to me, but intuition comes through the body. You're going to feel it first. Now, if it gets to the point where you've gotten ill, injured, some kind of disease, that's your body screaming at you.
Yes.
So you need to listen to your body. It's why I created Genesis Gold. That's my whole creative energy into Genesis Gold was I wanted others to be able to experience this ability to be so connected to their physicality that they could bring their intuition to the forefront and literally go with the flow and be in joy and be peaceful. And that's what's happening. People's bodies start talking to them.
Yes.
They can't ignore it.
Exactly. It's like 10% of our capacity, our brain capacity is rational. I just read this the other day. I wasn't sure, but it's, you know, some neuroscientists think it's even 5%. And we live in a world we act like it's 95%, right? And it's just the opposite.
Exactly. I can give you another analogy that may make a little more sense. I'm
okay.
A horseback rider.
Okay.
And I never rode horses with any kind of equipment, no saddle or bridles or anything. I grew up literally bareback, holding on to the mane and guiding the horse with my body and telepathically.
Good heavens.
Okay. So I tell my people, my patients is the horse is your body.
Right.
And the rider is your soul.
Yes.
So when those two are in connection, you don't need to speak. You don't even need to think. You just need to imagine where you want to be and that horse will take you there.
Golly. I've never heard one better than that. Oh my gosh.
Isn't that a beautiful picture?
It's magnificent.
I'm telling you, that's exactly what it feels like when you're in tune with your horse.
Wow. I think that's
absolutely amazing.
What's your vision going forward, just in a few sentences? Where are you headed? Yeah, especially talking to you who has these true visions.
Huge vision. Well, actually, I have envisioned this transformation of healthcare. And I know it's going to take time, but I envision shifting the model from this disease-oriented model to really patient orientation where the patient is totally responsible and understands that responsibility and uses it as their power.
Wow.
And so they're no more God-centered, the doctor's the God, and they're just doing what we're telling them to do. But we've come in deep partnership with them as healthcare providers. And I act as a coach and a cheerleader, but it's your race to run.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
So now we have a lot of health coaches out there, but yeah. I want to see my colleagues, the doctors, the nurse practitioners, the physician's assistants, those of us who've got the medical training and have all the licenses and the degrees and the ability to prescribe, we are the ones that need to start partnering with our patients.
Yeah. Well, it's almost impossible if you're raised in that system from what I've been paying attention to the last 25
years. It's very difficult, right. But I'm doing it.
Oh, no, you are. but you, when you think about how the system works in big pharmaceutical and big cancer industry, you know, the doctors are just, their hands are tied.
Right? You're right. Their hands are tied. But honestly, that's part of that perception. So if I believe I'm never going to climb the mountain, I'm never going to climb the mountain.
Exactly.
So I don't see it that way. I see this vision of this hope and this ability where we're partnering together, that there's no more me, it's we.
Yes.
And we're all working together for not just our own personal health, because it does start with me.
Yes.
If I'm not healthy, how can I have a healthy family or healthy household or healthy land?
Right.
It all starts with me.
Yeah.
And if we start understanding that all of the things that are happening to us is not really outside of us, it began inside with our belief systems, our visions, we're holding ourselves back.
Yes.
So it's not the system. We created the system.
Oh, I know. I think it's...
Which means we can change it.
Oh, we are changing it. I mean, look what's happening in across the whole industry. It's just amazing. It's... You know, the big money is still holding sway, but that's changing every day thanks to this wonderful thing called the internet. And information is ubiquitous. Everybody can have access to it. And even though most people don't want to pay attention to it, but more and more people are paying attention to it.
Well, and the thing is whenever there's change, because we're human and we don't like change that much, whenever there's change, everything's very black and white. So
that's right.
The worst of the worst comes up to the surface.
That's right.
But also the best of the best.
Yes.
You see both. And so there's going to be a little bit of pendulum swinging.
Yes.
But it is going to be okay. I had a dream a few years ago, and it was an end of the world dream. I have these occasionally.
Oh.
And it's like I'm in San Francisco, where my son ended up going to college, which was the perfect place for him to be, because he ended up starting an intersex group up there for kids like him.
Good for him.
Anyhow, so he's a whole nother story. He's an amazing story. Yes. But anyhow, so I'm in San Francisco. It's been completely destroyed. I'm hiding underneath these mattresses. Somebody's looking for us. I don't know what it is, but my feeling is we need to hide. And I hear this giggling voices like a little bit lower than me. And I tell they're little girls to just hush and be quiet. And we get out of there, whatever passes, and we wander over to where my husband has set up some kind of little encampment where he's done some kind of solar. And I have like refrigeration and ability to cook and all these little girls, and they're all Latinas. All little Latina little girls. They're all following me like I'm the Pied Piper. And my husband hands me over this little tiny, it looks like a pigeon, for me to cook for all these children. I'm like, okay. So I cook up this little pigeon and I'm starting to serve it to the children. And one of the little girls throws one of the little pigeon legs that she didn't quite eat everything off. Out behind her, some cat or something picks it up. And I say to that child, we really shouldn't waste anything because there's not much. And she said, oh no, if you make it, there'll always be enough. And points behind me and on the roaster looks like the size of an ostrich.
Oh my gosh.
And after our little meal, I go with the girls and we're wandering through this devastated city. And in between the cracks of the broken world are flowers popping up. And the girls take my hand and we examine the flowers and they ask me, what are the names of these flowers? And I said, it's a new world. We can call them anything we want. And I wake up.
Oh my gosh.
That's my vision for the future.
Well, Deborah Maragopoulos, how great to have you on the show today. We so much appreciate you sharing the highlights of your remarkable journey. And I know listeners around the world have learned lessons that will help them on theirs. How do those listeners connect with you?
Well, they can find me at thehormonequeen.com and just put in the Hormone Queen, you'll find me.
Okay.
And my book's there, my Genesis Gold's there. I have an incredible blog, but I also have a special offer page.
Good.
Where they'll get my 7 secrets to healthy hormones if they just sign up.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. That's perfect. Listeners know you can go to our homepage, discoveryourtalentpodcast.com, click on podcast in the nav bar, and you'll find the show notes of this illuminating interview, and you'll be able to find the connecting points as well. I want to thank listeners across the world for joining us. If you like our show, you like our interviews with like this one and expert interviews, please go to our homepage and subscribe. We'd love to have you be a part of our tribe and let us know how we can serve you better. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them. We can't ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive. We thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.